Elisabeth Sechser will gutes neues Arbeiten. Gutes neues Arbeiten für alle.
Hey, Company. You cannot move anymore. Less value creation press. No reason to find. You feel uncomfortable, overruled. Are you stuck in the middle of management? Come on, get up. Let's turn you outside in. Let's get swinging again. Shoo-wee-doo-wee-doo-wee-da. Hello everybody out there, can you hear me? Welcome in my podcast about great work for all of us. Dear hot workplaces, dear great people in companies, let's move, let's groove, let's get back to great work. Let's work together in self-organized teams. Let's build decentralized network organizations, which makes our companies powerful. Let's have fun at work. Let's swing. It's time to get life back into work. In this episode, you can listen to the founder of Bürzog, Jos de Blok. I met him in his car driving through the Netherlands, talking about the great work of Bürzog, this movement, this role model for so many companies, for so many countries. And this time, it's time for the 9th Beta Codex Principle. Here it comes, RISM, by Niels Pfleging.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to contribute to this episode. I'm especially happy to contribute to it because this principle, RISM, Tact and Groove, not fiscal year orientation, it's very dear to my heart. And in a way, it is the newest principle in the set of 12 Beta Codex laws. And maybe I should explain why that is. When we founded the Beta Codex Network in 2008, I think it was, one of the first tasks was to articulate a new set of 12 principles. And so we wrote it down, and it was derived from the Beyond Budgeting model, or the 12 principles of the Beyond Budgeting model. But we wanted to make it, you know, more crisp and sharper and more edgy and more encompassing as well. We thought about, okay, what have we learned from, let's say, the agile movement over the last years? What did we learn from the transformation work that we did? We made up our mind what was missing from the previous set of principles, and that's how we stumbled upon RISM, you know, and giving organizations tact and groove, you know, tact in a way of, you know, yeah, giving them a certain swinging velocities, a certain groovy quality, instead of having them follow annual rhythms and, let's say, tax-oriented annual cycles. So the concept of RISM, it really relates to making organizations not plan-based, annual cycles based, but allowing every team, every cell, every part of the organization, and every process, let's sort of say, of value creation to find its own rhythm, its own groove, its own speeds and cycle times. And what we see in corporations or organizations until this very day is that everything seems to follow the monthly or quarterly or annual cycles. And the whole organization is driven by these, let's say, crippling cycle times that come from, you know, tax declarations ultimately, you know, that a company must make. And in Agile or in Scrum, it's very clear that teams should and must find and choose their own cycle times, you know, their own sprint times, for example. So this is a very edgy principle, and something that most organizations until today are far, you know, far away from fulfilling. The idea of rhythm and groove in an organization, or to create swinging organizations that are swinging within their value creation and their flow cycles. This idea is totally opposed to those Shark Tank-like notions of, you know, creating ego-centered companies. It means that you give artisans or people with mastery freedom to do the work in the best way possible and to continuously aspire to make the work better, and also finding a rhythm for improving their own work.
Thank you, Niels. We will now dive into the world of Bürzorg and feel this rhythm. In 2006, Bürzorg started with four nurses to build a company that puts humanity over bureaucracy. Bürzorg always keep it small and simple. And now, in 2020, it is still small and simple, even with already 15,000 people working there. And 27 countries already have Bürzorg versions. Since 2019, we have an Austrian version too. Bürzorg is a story about human workplaces. Bürzorg shows us bye-bye management makes work meaningful, successful and beautiful for everyone again. So, let's start the road trip with Joste Block.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you and I can see you.
And for the warming up, I would like to ask you just some yes or no questions. I guess I already know the answers, but it's good to hear. So, in your organization, do you have command and control?
No, I don't believe in command and control.
Do you have top-down perceptions?
Not from an organizational perspective, but I'm looking down from my head to the floor, and everybody has top-down perspectives, I think.
Do you have management?
No, we don't have management, and we try to avoid all kind of management language.
Do you have bureaucracy?
We try to avoid useless bureaucracy, but there can be useful bureaucracy. So that's what, if we think it can improve what we are doing and people think it's meaningful, then we have some bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Do you have annual budgets?
No, we have money coming in and money going out. Mm-hmm. And it's based on some guidelines and it's always the same.
Mm-hmm. Do you have employee reviews?
No, we have evaluations when people think it's useful.
Mm. Do we have HR?
No, we have H.
H.
H. H. H. H.
Yes.
We have people. We have humans.
Humans, yes.
We have
yes.
People, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the last one, do you plan the whole year how it will?
No.
Develop.
No, because it's because of the way it works. The way we spend the money is always the same, so we don't need to plan.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plan.
Yeah, but now we will talk what we find there. And before you decided this movement, when I listened to your experience before 1993. Working yeah. as a nurse, as a community nurse, you are using words like it was one of the healthiest job you get and so inspiring and you were happy. So it sounds so great, but yeah. In 1993 something happened. What changed?
Based on some political discussions in the years before 1993, the idea was that the healthcare in general should have more market incentives. It should be professionalized in a way that they should become professional organizations with management. The idea was that healthcare could learn a lot from other industries and so on. So there was from, I think, the 80s, beginning of the 80s, these topics were political topics, and there were all kinds of assumptions that if healthcare would be organized like an industry, that it could be more controlled, the cost development could be different, they could, if you could see it as resources, then cheaper people could do the more expensive tasks and so on. So these were all kind of insights from different people based on most of the ideas of on new public management. So these were ideas in the 80s, which had an accumulation in the 90s in Holland. So the idea was that there should be a reorganization of healthcare in general, based on some insights from industries, from other industries, and based on economical perspectives.
So they thought that it will help people and the business, but it was a big mistake because it get worse. I mean, for the nurses,
yes,
for the customers, for everybody. Because
it was the whole analysis, the whole way it was analyzed by business people, economical people, based on economical insights, not on the insights not on the vision of nurses. It was a drama, you know. Till the 90s, beginning of the 90s, 1993, the community nurses, they were autonomous. They had the autonomy to make their own decisions. So working as a community nurse, I could decide on anything, everything myself. I had good colleagues, and every day was like you were dealing with very vulnerable people. You could decide on how much care they needed. You always decided it together with the patients. You had wonderful colleagues who were reflecting on what you were doing. Is it the right thing to do? Because there are always dilemmas in healthcare. What's the best thing to do? It's not an absolute. It's always something you have to discuss. You have to reflect on. So it was a very high standard of dealing with a very complex issues, because a lot of people were terminally ill, had very bad chronic diseases. So you had to think about, okay, how will it develop? What can I do to prevent unnecessary problems? And that's something you have to do in a kind of trustful relationship, not as part of an industry which is delivering hours and products. So. Mm-hmm. But that became the standard of 1993, 1994, beginning of these changes, and around 2000, it was, in my opinion, the complaints were so big that people were asking for other ideas. But it was only, you had the things which were organized by this organization I worked before. And you had more and more commercial groups of people, but it became even worse by them, because they were focusing on selling many hours. So in 2005, when I had worked for 10 years as a manager director in two big home care organizations, my idea was that the way we were doing it was not sustainable. It was, the costs went up, the quality went down, a lot of nurses quit their jobs, a lot of patients were dissatisfied about the way they were treated. And the system was creating more and more problems instead of solutions.
Yeah, that's the same like my experience in Austria and I'm sure you know a lot of other people who will have the same experience, that it's a system problem, it's not a people problem. Yeah. So you need to change the system. And Gürzog is a role model that it's not just the case, it's a role model that is working all over the world. So You decided to start. You said you decided to start a movement in 2006, and it's a big movement. I mean,
it is 15,000 the nurses who are working in Holland.
In Holland and in
So we have 10,000 nurses and 5,000 care workers working, and in other countries. There are, I think, 26 countries which are where we have partners, and these partners are working with the boots of IDN.
Like in Austria, the movement you started in 2006 now started in 2020. So Austria goes Bürzog, and I will meet the Austrian team pretty soon and talk with them about their great work and how Bürzog can get this great movement in Austria too, because I think it's really urgently needed for all of us, for all people.
Yes.
You always wanted to keep it small and simple, and it is still small and simple. Even with 15,000 people in Holland, it's small and simple. So what are the main principles to build, to keep it small and simple?
Yes, my idea was to build on the logic of what was needed. So if you are working in a neighborhood, if you keep the scale of the neighborhood small, so around 5,000 to 10,000 people, and you build a team for the people who need support, then a team of should not be bigger than 10 to 12 nurses. As long as you have a group of people who know each other very well, who have the same ideas about what is needed to do, and they will organize everything themselves. My idea was use this all these talents in the daily work, and most of the things will go well. So don't worry about all these things which can happen. So so one of the principles is these groups of around 10 to 12 people, the scale of the neighborhoods, simplicity. So try to simplify the things as much as possible around the nursing process, because the nursing process can be quite complicated. As you know, the daily routine, what happens when somebody has a severe healthcare problems, when people are terminally ill, have chronic diseases. So you have to find your way in this daily routine, and that can lead to quite complex interventions. But the routine itself is the same every day. So every day you meet patients. Every day you have to schedule your activities. Every day you have to think about how you're going to work together as a team. These routines, if you do them, if you learn to do them well, then it gives a lot of freedom for the way you deal with your patients. So if you have the autonomy as a team to take care for these patients, and you have some guidelines on quality, on collaboration, and on productivity, then most of the things don't need much attention. So because these people are all intrinsic motivated to do things as good as possible. So what we say is, okay, these principles, as I said, the neighborhood, a team, the team would organize everything themselves, then these guidelines on productivity, on quality, and on collaboration. That's almost everything you need to keep on doing the things you're doing in a certain routine. And then you need support from the back office and the coaches. So the back office is taking care for all the bureaucracy. So taking care also for the salaries, but also taking care for the billing to the health insurance. And the coaches, we developed a role as coach to support teams when teams need support. So they can ask for a coach and say, okay, we have this problem in the team. We don't know how to solve it ourselves. Please help us to think with us. And then the role of the coach is very important, not to take over, but to support the team in a way that they can solve the next problem themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's also a learning process all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things together need to be based on a consistent view on people. So it's a way of thinking. It's a way of you trust the people who are doing this, but it's also based on very intelligent ways of looking at the world, in my opinion. So I think if you understand this daily practice, and if you support it when it's needed, then everything will grow by itself.
So it's like in complexity, there is a lot of dynamic in this this market. So it's really important to always swing with the customers because some need to be taken into the hospital suddenly and suddenly need to leave the hospital, or some are dying. Yeah. So you don't know. Sometimes you know, but you're never sure when somebody will die or somebody the family cannot help anymore because he got sick too. Or
all these changes every day. They ask for a lot of flexibility, but also autonomy to be able to follow the flow of this of all the different patients. So, and if you can follow what's happening and also think ahead, because some of the things you can foresee. If you are a good nurse, then you know when people are well supported, when they're well informed, then you know that they feel less uncertain.
So this organizational model is kind of so you can swing with the world, or you can work in the rhythm of the world, what is needed, because every day the team tries to do the best for the people that need help now. So, and they are by them, they can organize by themselves. And you said the back office is very small. I think it's 50 people.
It's around 50 people.
Yeah. Around 50 people, yeah. So it's good to have it, but it doesn't need to be that big like another organization. It's too much administration.
But you see, Ben, also the back office and also the management structure is too big and too rigid, that it has a big impact on the way that people are doing their work.
Yes.
So usually the back office has a lot of influence on the daily process of the nurses. So we said, no, that should be the other way around. The back office should only be supportive to what the nurses need.
I'm sure you have a lot of reactions like this. Oh, that's very inspiring and so smart, but not realistic in our environment. What do you think about this kind of arguments?
Yeah, I think it's usually the management perspective and the patterns that are developed in organization that is bothering people to think freely. So it's you must really see that it's another paradigm. So it's looking at the world from another perspective. So if you are in another paradigm, if you are led by the system and structures of an organization, it's very difficult to see it, that it can be done in a very different way. So people develop this behavior and the way of thinking in time. And when you have done this 20 years in a certain way, it's not so easy to see the other side of the, and also not to see all the advantages of working this way. And for some people, it's reality that it doesn't have advantages, because they will lose their jobs if they would work this way. You don't need the management you have in a traditional hierarchical organization.
Yeah, but I mean, the one thing is that, like, also in Austria and in lots of other countries, everybody says we have a healthcare problem because we really do not have that much people. And So they try to solve a problem finding more people. But I think there are a lot of nurses who wanted to do their great job, but it's the system who doesn't help them to work the way they want. So and there are models like Bürzog that shows that there are different other ways, and they are successful. And here in Austria, nurses, like the work of nurses is associated with a lot of work, overtime, poor pay, difficult working condition, lots of pressure, lack of stack, hard work. So a lot of people cruising between having pity, admire them, feel a bit uncomfortable. And since COVID-19, we are all applauding from the windows, but still no movement in politics and big organization is coming up. And what's the patterns do you see? Because why do not thousands of companies learn and adapt? So it's.
No, but what I see is that there is a lot of interest. So I see that certainly the last 10 years, more and more people are interested in new ways of working, new ways of organizing, more sustainable ways. So the focus is changing. So, but it goes slowly. So I think that by creating examples, people can see the difference. So the first step now is important, that people like Wolfgang in Austria, with his people, are showing that it can be done in a different way. So, and at the moment, we're doing this in 27 countries all over the world. And but I see that it's increasing. There is awareness about things should be, if we don't change things, we will have big problems in the future in healthcare. So young people, for example, if you look at the youth and people between 20 and 30, they have other ideas about working than the generation who created this. So they want to have more freedom in their work. They want to do good for the planet, and they want to also enjoy themselves.
But I think also the nurses 20 years ago wanted more freedom in the work. Like what you're saying, it then you had an inspiring job, and then the management system, the Tayloristic system, make a disaster. And I think all people in all generation wants freedom, free work, wants do not want, we all want democratic workplaces, and we are all able to do that. So I think it the question is for the management, what do they want? Because they are all smart people. I mean, they are able to think about what they learned and to learn something new. So I think they can do that. So I think it's easier than people saying that it's not easy. Yeah. Because there are a lot of people who say it's not easy, and or we can do that in our organization. And I think sometimes it really sounds more like an that's not true.
Yeah. No, I think there is a lot of people think that only as an organizational structure is sustainable. So they think that you used to have. McGregor, you have the X and I people.
Yes.
So it starts with how do you look at people? Do people think by themselves, or do they need something who is leading them? So I really believe that everybody has a need for a meaningful life. Everybody has an intrinsic motivation. Everybody wants to do good things. If that's your point of view, you are going to build a different environment than when you think people need a leader. Mm-hmm. So, and if you look at the last 100 years, it became stronger and stronger, the belief that people should be led by somebody which was called a leader or a manager. And this thinking, if you look at the MBAs, for example, the Master of Business Administration, it's everywhere the same, all over the world. This thinking about organizations should be led this way. It should be about the financial perspective. It should be about growth. It should be about the structure and the systems which are leading organizations to success. So my idea is that this is coming to an end, because it's not, it's got, people got stuck, and it leads to a disengagement of people. And then you see that when organizations start to work from another perspective, it is easy. Mm-hmm. And it will grow fast, and people want to work this way. So we have to go back to normal ways of thinking, in my opinion. So yes. Normal language, normal behavior.
In Austria you say Hausverstand, so it's like I think you know this word. Yeah, but I talk a lot with a lot of people from different organizations, and I really have the feeling a lot of them want to change, wants to leave, yeah. Want to find better structures, change the system. And I believe that people really can do that very, like, you can rethink in 1 minute. You do not need 2 or 3 generations to rethink the world, because that would not be good for the other people in organization. We just need to work on that, and the management. It's a question of what do they want? And they don't losing their jobs. I mean, they are losing their functions, but because it's not needed anymore. But it's good for everybody. One problem in Austria is we don't have people, so they start to find people to fit into the organization instead of changing the organization. Then people will come, I think. Also, in the Netherlands, you had different billing systems. Like you have different products. Nurse products and different billing system, but it changed. How did you do that? How did you solve this problem of the different billing of services?
Yeah, from the start, I proposed a new way of thinking. I said it's more important to see the results of what you're doing than monitor the hours and the products. So I said, if there just would be one service, it would simplify the administrative process enormous. It would also bring a focus on what is the result of what we are doing, instead of thinking in all these different products and minutes and all these different definitions. So I said, within Buurtzorg, we could handle it this way from the start. So from the start, we said, we're only delivering one service, it's called Buurtzorg. And then we said to the care offices and the health insurance, we said, we want to negotiate one price. And it can be the average price of everything. So if you say, now we have, for example, we had 15 different products.
Wow.
And the different products have different prices. But what I knew from the past, because I'm working now for almost 40 years in healthcare, is that the average price is quite the same always. So I said, just pay us the average price. If you want, we can give you lists with the different products. It's not reality, because we don't monitor these products. But if you need it for your own internal administration, then we will do it. But at the same time, we show that by doing it this way, just having one product, we had much better outcome. So we had very high quality of care. So we had the highest from the start on satisfaction. And what was much more important for the system was that we had much lower costs per client. So the cost per client went down with 30 to 40%. So I said, don't push on the price per hour, because that's not where you are saving the money. Money will be saved by doing the right things at the right moment. Mm. So if you have the right interventions, if you have a good relationship with your patient, if you do what is needed, no more, then you will reduce the costs at the end. So and we had two reports from Ernst & Young and KPMG which showed that this was the result we had. Mm. And then they said, also the politicians, the health insurers, I said, give the autonomy to the nurses, let them decide on what is needed, and you will see that the system changed towards the most cost-effective system. Mm. So, and then we had the Minister of Health, which was very helpful. She decided to change the law. She said, okay, let's do this. This is what we need. It's possible now to have just one price. That's now legal. It's legal that the nurse is deciding on what is needed. That's also legal. So these two things changed in the system. And now the next step is that we, with health insurers, are creating conscious contracts. So we said, okay, now there is trust. They believe that Buurtzorg is delivering care of high quality against reasonable cost. So let's talk about how can we improve it for the future. So we are talking with each other with the same goal, the same perspective. And we say, okay, what can we do together? So we're not enemies anymore. The health insurers want to be friends with us. Mm. So I said, and how do friends behave? They just be honest and they do things based on trust. Mm. So that's the way we are working together now. And every year we have a decrease of hours. Mm. So the quality is always on the same level, but by learning to do more preventive interventions, then we see that we still can reduce the hours per client per year. Mm. Clients are very happy, nurses are happy, and the costs go down. Mm-hmm. So I said, this way we can deal with also the shortage of nurses, which is coming everywhere. Mm-hmm. So if you can say, we reduce every year 3 or 4% of the volume, then you need less nurses. So the patient, the nurse, the system itself, it all has advantages for everybody. Mm.
For the future, what do you expect? In which direction organizations have to shape in the future? What are the key factors for company development today and tomorrow?
So contribute to a higher purpose for society. That's important for all companies in the future, and it should be already now and in the past, but it will be more and more important. Then wholeness, how can people develop themselves in the daily practice, in their work? So don't see people as a human resource, but see them as a person who can contribute in many ways. And let use the brains and the creativity of these people. And then self-organization. Let people decide themselves on what they want to do, what they need to do. Give the ownership to the people instead of organizing everything around them and managing everything out. So do what is needed. Mm-hmm. And it means also don't do what is not needed. So we do many things in organizations when nobody asks for, and it's has a negative impact on people. Yeah. So do what is needed, reflect, rethink on are you still doing the right things, reflection on a lot of things. And then the third principle she mentioned is the common sense principle. Use your common sense in what you're doing.
Thank you a lot. And for me, Buurtzorg is really a very strong beta organization, an organization that is always in a developing mood, in a swinging mood with the market, in a learning mood, and it's focusing on the principles. Is there any message for Austria? Because now the movement in Austria starts.
It would be great if, on one hand, the examples which are already developing are successful. And on the other hand, if there is awareness on the highest level, with a minister, with the government, that things need to change. There is the need for a transition in the system. And it should be supported by politicians. It should be, they should take responsibility for the future for the elderly of Austria.
Yes, I guess I will meet the minister. I think he's really busy now because there's a lot of COVID things.
Send him my best.
I will do. So thanks a lot. And all the best. Thank you.
Okay, you too. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Elizabeth. Bye.
Thank you, Jos. Before I will call Mr. Arnschober and ask for a meeting, let's get back to Nils Pfleging and the principle, the Beta Codex Law, RISM. Nils, what can we find, see, feel in beta organizations? How do people look at their value creation?
You know, beta organizations, they come from, they look at their own value creation from a perspective of mastery and ability, team's ability to do something phenomenally, you know, to transform materials or to transform information into something truly valuable for customers. And this, let's say, tradition from the practice of artisans from the pre-industrial times, you know, this is very important in beta organizations of all kinds, like Toyota and WL Gore, and even a bank like Handelsbanken. I think this notion of people in organizations as artisans is crucial to beta and beta organizations. Even at Handelsbanken, which is, you know, just a bank. Well, Sweden's biggest bank, but still just a bank, you know. When you meet people at Handelsbanken, you can sense that they are proud to be bankers. They are in the boring business of banking, which is, you know, nothing that fantastic or interesting in a way, but they are proud to fulfill that role for society. Of course, this is much more visible still at companies like Toyota, where teams truly aim and strive for making the work better all the time. The Kaizen in the business is as important as is the mere production of goods or car manufacturing. And the beauty of RISM as a principle is that teams are in a way challenged and obliged to find their own, you know, to make their value creation breathe.
Bürzorg is a great place to work for 15,000 people in the Netherlands and change the healthcare system. So we can learn from this model, we can love it. But is love enough?
Over the last couple of years, Bürzorg has probably been the most commented case of a beta organization worldwide, and rightfully so, I think, because the company is so new, so young, it grows fast, and it is so innovative in its own, you know, industry of nursing and care. What I find most interesting is that the way they are approaching their industry is so innovative and fresh as well, you know, looking at IT systems to support self-organized teams and so on. That's very inspirational. But it's also interesting to observe, even though we have known about Bürzorg and the Bürzorg case for quite a few years now, I think 6 to 8 years. Still very few companies seem to imitate this approach. You know, we have a romantic love for this kind of story, this kind of case example. But once again, we see that those great cases, they do not change the world, you know, unless we act responsibly and transform our own organizations with, you know, inspired by organizations such as Toyota, Southwest Airlines, DM, or Bürzorg. Unless we do not transform all our organizations, I think we will not, you know, see the see the big changes in society that we would like to see.
Everything depends on the image of human nature, doesn't it?
I met a few people from Bozog already, and what I find most interesting is that they all talk about people without drama. You know, they take self-organization as a natural thing. They take self-organization and its effectiveness for their business for granted. And that is something that I love. I just love it about the best beta organizations. You know, they don't make a lot of fluff about their assumptions on human nature. They just, you know, walk the talk and take people, you know, treat people like adults. So the image of human nature is not a taboo, but it is very, you know, natural to commit to theory Y thinking about human nature. Our image of human nature is decisive for what's possible, you know. Only if we believe that people are self-motivated, intrinsically motivated to do their best, to give their best at work, if the conditions are right, only then is it possible to transform an organization, to create a huge organization that is, you know, very, very light on administration and bureaucracy and that has literally no need for steering or for middle managers pushing the work or pushing the rules into everybody's faces. It all comes down to, do we have the right set of assumptions about human nature?
Jos, Niels, thank you so much for your great contributions. And whenever COVID-19 will calm down, we can meet Jos de Block and Niels Pfleging in Stuttgart. There will be the next Chameleon Conference, powered by my colleagues Diana and Victor Vetrelli. Pretty soon, I will meet the Austrian version of Bozog and bring their story into this podcast. If you are interested to start working there or to return to your nursing profession, feel free to apply. How you can do that, you will find in the show notes. There you will also find links to follow Bozog and the Beta Codex, the Chameleon Conference, and again links with some books I highly recommend.
Very important words.
My favorite very important words of these episodes are humanity, value creation breath, and swinging. My name is Elisabeth Sechser, and I have a passion for the questions every time brings and a never-ending desire to face them. I hope it was stimulating and exciting, and I hope we see us or hear us next time again. Dear company, you feel better now? You feel the rhythm, the grooves, the moves. Yes, let's get swinging again.
Elisabeth Sechser will gutes neues Arbeiten. Gutes neues Arbeiten für alle.